What's up, beautiful people?
Hey guys.
Welcome back to the What's Up, Beautiful People podcast. We are so glad that you guys are here. We are coming up, what is this, episode 17 or something like that?
We've had a few now.
We've kind of got a few under our belt. We're starting to feel a little more comfortable, you know, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yep.
Had a lot of really great guests so far, and today is certainly no exception to that. We've got Seth and Heather Day here today. Heather is an associate professor of communication at Andrews University. She and Seth have co-written a book together called, and I love the name of this book, I'll See You Tomorrow. And the implications of this book are amazing. So we're so glad to have you guys on the podcast. Welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes. Welcome.
Man.
Our honor. We are really
thank
honored
you so
to be
much.
Here.
I love that you're both sitting in separate cameras. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so great. So I tell you're in Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. How cold is it in Michigan right now?
Do we want to sob? Should we start at a low point? Are we going to go there? I just told
it was
students,
27 degrees in Tennessee.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Yeah, well, so we had snow yesterday. So I see your 27 and I raise you snow. Yes. So the weather of where we live is very difficult for us. We just came back actually from Denver where we loved the weather.
Oh, yeah.
So we are really in our feelings about the weather here in Michigan.
I hear that. I will say I've never actually been to Michigan. But I've heard the summers are like second to none, though.
Like, we feel very fond about the summers. Michigan people love Michigan summers. That is true.
They used to broadcast these commercials. I don't know if they do it in Michigan, but they would have these commercials, pure Michigan.
Yes,
of course. Like,
the most soothing voice talking about how clear, crystal the water is.
It's true.
I mean, we need to go to Michigan.
I know, you absolutely should.
Have a lot of fun. So that's amazing. Well, are y'all listening to Christmas music already, if that's the case, or what's your take on when is appropriate to listen to Christmas music? Okay. If there's snow on the ground, I guarantee you Leslie Odom Jr.'s Christmas album is playing in my house.
You know what? I'm not big on Christmas music, but I did say to Seth, I know, Anti-Hero, Taylor Swift's album just came out. So I'm the anti-hero. Yeah. I did say to Seth last week, I was like, should we get a Christmas tree though? I feel That's like true. I do want to see the tree lit up. Yeah. I'm not big on the music though.
Okay. It does. It is the same stuff every year. But if you're not like a nostalgic type person, I think that might be. I'm very nostalgic.
There you
but
go.
That said, Midnight's is great.
Thank you so much. So that's the season that we are celebrating to those who observe. Great.
I listened all morning during my workout today. And I'm
did
like,
too.
This is great because I thought Folklore and Evermore were phenomenal. Like,
listen.
And this is just like a totally different approach to her music, and it's awesome. So
she always knows how to put her finger on the pulse of the nation. Thank you, Taylor.
My wife will talk about this for like 2 hours. Yeah.
This is her thing. Seth's like, change the subject now.
She is fired up right now.
The title of this podcast, Seth and Heather Day, how we really feel about Taylor Swift. Yeah,
that's right.
I was going to stand right there with you.
I'm a Swiftie, for sure.
I am too, but you are just like, ultimate man.
I bond with my oldest daughter. She's hardcore Swiftie, so like we will buy her birthday's on Tuesday, so she's gonna get the vinyl. For Midnight's, which is pretty good because with the last two records you couldn't get the vinyl for like a year or something like that, so I'm just glad that we can get it.
Yeah, I did get the beach towel. I have a beach towel that says Swiftie from the last one.
I love that. That's awesome. Very cool. Well, you guys have a new book out. I just love, number one, that you wrote it together. I would love to hear what that looked like for you. But tell us a little bit about what's the book? What are you hoping to see happen with that? What kind of tools are you trying to give people in their relationships to have healthy relationships? We read a bunch of it together. We haven't finished it yet, but we definitely read a good chunk of it. Mm-hmm. And we love it. We actually read it in the car with our daughters in the back and they're like, oh, that's good. You know?
Yeah.
So reading it out loud and they're like, it just came out October 4th.
Yeah.
So people can get it right now. What do you want to see happen with this book? What's the goal?
So I'll let Seth tackle what it was like to write together. But I can tell you, we in the pandemic, we were watching The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan docuseries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's this moment in there where it's before the Bulls became the Bulls. Right. Uh-huh. And they make it all the way to the playoffs. And they lose. They're playing Orlando Magic and they lose. Ugh. And there's this moment where everybody's like, the season's over. over, you can go home. It's vacation time. They're all walking out. And Tim Grover, who's Jordan's trainer, he says that he turned to Michael Jordan and he said, "Hey, I know you're leaving, but just let me know when I'll see you." And Jordan looks at him and goes, "Oh, I'll see you tomorrow." And so the idea was that the reason Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan is because when everybody else went home, Michael Jordan went back to the gym. He never quit. It. And so our idea was, man, I just think that there's so many people who are really struggling right now relationally and in isolation and loneliness, because my fear, I'm a college professor, my fear is that we are raising an entire generation of young people to know really good information about how to leave, which is important, and good information, which is important, on boundaries and don't let them treat you this way. But my God, we need to know how to stay.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to have relationships that span decades unless you've learned how to say to somebody, "I'll see you tomorrow," even though I am mad right now, even though I'm frustrated, even though that felt really selfish of you. Mm. "I'll see you tomorrow because I value this relationship."
Wow. That's really good.
That's powerful.
That's really good. Yeah, you can't make old friends. That's like,
right.
It's like the hardest truth. It's like you have all these people that it is. I mean, I think something you guys hit on the head is it's so easy to quit in this day and age, in this culture. It's like everything, like it's all I have to do is hit unsubscribe and now I don't have to hear from you anymore. All I have to do is text back stop or ghost you or leave your stuff unread or whatever. Like it's so easy to just, what is it? We're calling it quiet quitting now on stuff. Like, it's just wild. Like, I think learning how to stick with it is so important, whether that be relationally or work or like goals or whatever. Like, a lot of times I feel like what happens is when we don't see the results that we want, like super, super quick, we give up, you know? And with relationships, especially ones that we're looking at long-term, you know, sometimes it took like decades to get to where you are in a problem, and it's not going to get fixed overnight. Like, you gotta put in the hours, you know?
Yeah, I totally
I love what you guys are saying with that. That's amazing. And you talk about in the book, like the way that our different personalities kind of play into that, right? Like Pippen versus Jordan versus, I forget his name, the Rodman, Dennis Rodman. Which I love this. I'm not really a sports guy, but like that era of the Bulls was like my era. You know what I mean? That era of sports in general, you look at the Bulls, you look at the Rangers, you had Nolan Ryan with his 5,000 strikeout. You got all this stuff happening during that. That was the Cowboys heyday, you know, like it was a good, few years for sports, and then I abandoned it altogether, but I still have fond memories that era of sports.
Seth, did you want to speak to that? The different.
Yeah. So writing this book with Heather was just, honestly, she was going to sit down and write a book, and she was talking to me about the book and what she wanted to write, and this concept of relationships, and, before I was asked to write it with her, I just kind of paused and I looked at her, because we have two very different life stories, our past. And I just said, "Yeah, if only it were that easy," essentially. And then she looked at me and she's kind of like, "Well, why don't you write this with me?" And so that was awesome to be asked to write this book. And our writing process through the book is, I mean, Heather brings all this academic knowledge from her 10 plus years of teaching communications and classroom experience, in all these articles and things that she's read. But what I love what Heather does in the book is that she just makes it so easy to understand for the everyday person who may not want to do all those hours of research. And so I think she does a beautiful job of that. And then I bring a lot of my personal stories to back that up in the book. If we're talking about pain or something, and she'll give some stats and statistics beautifully written, then I'll share some stories from my life. And so for me personally, on my end of it, it was a journey. If you look at the beginning, I chapter two, I start off just kind of giving a background of who I was, but then by the end of it, there's a chapter on forgiveness. And so I actually went through a journey myself writing this book. And so if there's someone who's considering even like, "Well, I don't know if this is for me, they're just going to share all this stuff, and do they really believe it?" Like, no, there were days of tears and crying, and we prayed this thing through and talked this through and rewrote it. And so this is something that really is meaningful to us.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Isn't that so interesting? Because we kind of had a similar experience with Stephen's book, although I didn't co-write it with him necessarily, but there was a lot of us working together on it, and
there really was
wrestling through it. Like, writing a book is such a stretching experience because you really are pouring your heart and soul into it. And so I just, I very much feel that.
It's that push pull. It's like, I'm this like big idea guy. I make these broad sweeping statements about how life can be great if you just work harder or whatever. and she's like, well, let's just drill down to the details of that. Is that really honest?
Right.
Is that really true? Is that really, what about this, 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 and this? And I'm like, oh yeah, I should maybe fix this, you know? And so like, it was really good because she was sort of my editor in chief in a lot of ways to like help me kind of see my own blind spots of, you know, my own, like, you know, maybe overly optimistic mindset that isn't always practical, you know? We are, as a result, writing a book together right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
We haven't really announced yet. So, hey, guys.
Well, here we go. Like, are we talking?
We're starting the process of writing it. We've got the outline. We're talking through it. But it'll be a really interesting process because we are very, we do take very different approaches to writing. So I'm just like.
And we're very different, like personality wise.
Yeah.
Too. Yep.
I was going to ask you guys, are you guys very like
totally opposite?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we were dating, I remember his mom said to him, what do you guys really have in common? Because it's our relationship dynamic. But Seth and I, we went to sixth grade together. So we've known each other since sixth grade. So I think at this point, what we have in common is our past.
A lot of history.
There's so much history there. And we're absolutely best friends as well.
Mm-hmm. I love
and
that.
And we dated in the sixth grade too.
Wow. We were high school sweethearts. See, you guys.
Okay, there you go. That. So sweet.
Prom was our first date. We got married pretty much as soon as she graduated. So that was
amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, we totally get the whole like growing up together. And
it's a different thing, isn't it? Yeah. I really think because it's, our relationship is so much built also on this deep, deep friendship because we grew up together. It's a unique experience.
Yeah. I would be curious to hear, because some of the marriage counseling that we've gone to, because you do, I think some of it, that's sort of a double-edged sword, because when you spend that long together, you have this long history together. And sometimes you can't break out of like, this is the you that I've known for so long versus this is the you that you are now. You know, and that can kind of create some tension sometimes, or at least it has with us, which is an invitation to work at it rather than give up. Right. Yeah. In your experience as having been together for a long time, what does that look like for you guys? Did that have anything to do with this book? Like, you know, you have any wisdom for people who are, we're coming up on 20 years.
Congratulations.
This year. So it'll be 20 years this year.
Well, we weren't together romantically that entire time.
Just in the sixth grade.
In sixth grade, seventh grade, and then Seth's family moved away and I never heard from him. His brother, Tyler, who we dedicated the book to, who passed away of cancer, who was also one of my best friends, Tyler would come visit me. And I in high school, and I'd be like, where's Seth? And he'd say, Seth says he's never coming back to this town and never wants to see anybody from this town.
I'm like an out of sight, out of mind person, unfortunately. Yeah, and I need to work on that. So
then we got reconnected when it was our sophomore year of college. I was actually engaged to marry somebody else. So that's a whole other story in itself.
Wow.
That's amazing. What are you guys Enneagrams?
I am three.
You're a three.
Two.
A two. Okay.
Upper, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
What are you guys though?
I'm a 7-8, pretty strong 8 week.
Yeah. I think I'm a 9-1 or a 9-8, maybe 9 both.
Okay. I think probably an 8-9.
Yeah.
For you, honestly.
Yeah. But we're
a 9 with a strong 8 wing.
Polar opposites in so many ways.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So,
yep.
Like, it's interesting because from the outside, we always hear comments of like, you guys are perfect for each other. And I think it's, I don't know, maybe because we do the hard work of have a healthy relationship, but it's not because it like just naturally is so easy because we are so opposite.
Yeah.
So, crazy.
But I get that on the out of sight, out of mind thing, because I think that's one of the parts of like being who I am is that like I, for the longest time, I felt like I didn't make deep, meaningful connections with people because I just like wouldn't miss people, you know? Yes. And then as I get older, it's very different. Like, I feel like I have so much of that now. Like if I even leave for a night now, like I'm like, God, I miss my family so much. Like,
that's,
which is so different from how I was even 5 years ago or 6 years ago. Yep. It's crazy. Yeah. So
I'll go camping and I'll be like, I need to go, you know, I just need to decompress. And if I, the few times I'll go by myself overnight, just to, my wife says, yeah, go for a night and come back in the morning. I'll be out there laying in a hammock in the middle of the woods. Yeah. And I'm like, what am I doing here? I need to go home. I have kids. I have a wife. Yeah. What am I doing out here in the woods? So I'm like, I can relate to that.
That's amazing. Obviously that's in the summertime.
Yeah. Yes,
yes, yes. Oh man, that's incredible. Well, I love that. Okay. So, there is, you guys have pretty different. Seth, you were a pastor for a while. Are you still pastoring now?
No, I'm still involved in ministry, more of a lay setting, getting back into it, but I pastored for a few years in Denver while Heather was teaching out there. So uh-huh. I'm actually a full-time okay. instructor, at Andrews University teaching, oh, cool. Public speaking courses. And then I help out with the grieving and loss course for a different university.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Okay. I was a pastor for about 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
We started yeah. doing YouTube just kind of as a way to help, you know, supplement our income. Cause sure. we found out that our son had pretty severe brain disease, was going to need some big surgeries, and it just kind of took off. And we kind of just started feeling like, man, this is what God's got his hand on. Like, let's dive in all the way. And so I haven't been in full-time ministry in about 3 years, a little over 3 years now.
It was actually a big leap of faith too, because we were kind of feeling, we'd been just going for so many years, and we felt like we needed to take a step back and rest. And that was a very scary
yeah.
process. And then as yeah. soon as you did that, and then COVID hit like a few yeah. months later. And so we were at home anyways, and we're like, well, I guess we made the right decision. Yeah. So it just wow. worked out that way. But
and all the online viewership exploded at the exact same
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
It was wow. pretty wild. I think some of that is when you, there was a lot of uncertainty. And I think that sometimes that can drive marriages apart. I think for us, it really did push us closer to each other.
Mm-hmm. Being forced to slow down. I do think that's really interesting, the way that that affected our relationship, because we had to kind of pull close and slow down. And so yeah. we were able to kind of just have that bandwidth to like talk through things more and like yep. not sweep things under the rug. And so, yeah, there was a lot there that I feel like that really shaped our relationship in so many ways, especially that first year.
Yeah. Do you guys feel, how do you feel like that really, I mean, writing a book like this coming off of a pandemic, I'm sure that somehow like informed the way you're writing things, right? Like yeah. it was so weird during the pandemic to read these weird headlines like marriage is struggling because they can't have affairs during the pandemic or whatever.
Oh, wow.
You're like, what the heck? Like,
oh, yeah,
that was like a legit headline. And I can't remember where it was, but like there was even yeah. a movie that came out that was like they're in a pandemic and they hate each other and they're trying to figure it out. And like there was a lot of weird stuff that happened. Sure. But like in general, do you feel like the last few years have been harder on marriages or like healing for marriages, or like what is that, how do you feel like that's helped or not?
I think that what it's done to during the pandemic is it revealed things that maybe people were able to more easily ignore. And mm-hmm. so maybe there were some of those issues there, yeah. but because of lifestyles that, you know, busy big concerts, all these things we fill our lives with,
yeah.
everything stopped and we had to face some of that. And we see that in the church setting too. Like church can be a really beautiful place for community, but something happened during the pandemic and coming back for many people. And so was it always there? Did COVID change it? I don't know. So
yeah.
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I know it's been hard. Yeah. on yeah. most marriages, because I can think really quickly of many of my friends who have gotten divorced since the yeah. pandemic. So I think it was hard. I think for, again, Seth and I, what it did in some ways, and I don't want to like ever say, oh, there's beauty in the pandemic, because it was horrible and over a million right. people right. lost their lives. So mm-hmm. I acknowledge that. In our experience, though, I think it did teach me personally how to slow down.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
yeah. And I still am in this place. I don't know about you, but I think it just brought so much into focus in my life where I had to stop. That's probably at least where chapter 3 of this book came from, where I had to stop and say, what am I doing all this for?
Mm.
Is it to make myself feel important?
Yeah.
Right. What am I actually running for, because at the end of the day, for me, speaking and writing and all that stuff, at the end of the day, if I'm gone tomorrow, the only people who really care is my family. I'm not saying other people won't say that was sad and you won't talk about it or tweet about it, but my family is the one that's going to really feel that void. And it was just a huge moment for me to reflect on my own life and my choices. And I still don't think, I don't think I'm ever going to be the same. Right. I don't think I need to feel success in the way my Enneagram 3-ness needed to feel success before the pandemic. I don't, or my idea of what success is doesn't look the same anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I get that for sure. And I think that there's something with that. I think that's what the Enneagram does, is sort of reveals.
Oh my goodness.
Your area of growth, right?
Yes.
So when you're forced into a place where you can get healthier, like I can not act like everything's a-okay all the time, you know, like I can actually feel deep pain and hurt and not ignore it and not shove it down. Like those are great things, like prioritize people over experiences or, you know, doing whatever. Like I think in a lot of ways, the pandemic did reveal so much of our unhealthiness. And it forced conversations with us that I mean, had we had those conversations differently than we did, like it could have gone very different for us, you know?
It's like what you choose to do moving forward with that. But I think you're so right that it is so challenging and it was so difficult because, I mean, it's something nobody's ever been through. Like, you don't have a category for it. And so it's going to be scary and painful. And we definitely felt all of that for sure.
Speaking of like having, you know, coming at things from a very different, from different perspectives on life. You guys are an interracial marriage. You come from an interracial family.
Yeah.
We have a very diverse family. We've got two kids from China, two kids from Ethiopia. And so, you know, that's a huge value for us and something that we love, but even that in our family reveals a lot of differences, in the way that those kids' culture, you know, may have influenced or shaped them versus our cultures growing up. I'm curious how, Heather in specific, how that like has shaped you and, changed maybe your perspective going into your marriage with Seth. You guys have three children, beautiful names. I love the name London. It's like,
oh, thank you.
Nice to be able to say.
Like if we ever have another girl.
Thank you.
So, how would you answer that?
You know, this is something I've, again, been exploring even more in the last year. I think in some ways, the words, can I sit here, define a lot of my childhood experiences. To this day as an adult, if I walk into a room, I always wonder like, can I have this? Is this okay? Am I allowed to sit here? Is there space for me here? Because being biracial, there's only now, I think it's a lot more common. So my kids have tons of biracial friends that they even know. But for me growing up in a small Midwestern town, there wasn't a lot of other, interracial families. And I have never, I don't know, there's just a lot of things that you don't fully have, the privileges of whiteness, of course, or like the community of blackness until I prove it. So there's a lot of things that have impacted my personal experience. And I'm not going to speak for all biracial people, just for me, of always trying to figure out where exactly do I fit. That's a big theme of my entire life, I think, is wondering, is there a seat for me at this table? And am I okay if there's not?
Right. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Has that impacted the way that you and Seth come at your relationship sometimes?
Seth, I think again, because our dynamic is so unique in the fact that I jumped on my trampoline with him when I was 11.
I
have memories of his mother. And I was just saying this to both of our parents when they were over last weekend. I was like, why did you guys let me go to his house? Like his mom used to pick me up and we'd go ride horses at this other person's farm. And I'm like, I was 11. Why did you let me go with this boy's family to go ride horses? But for whatever reason they did. And so our dynamic has always been so authentic and vulnerable. Right. And he's seen me with braces. Like there's, it's just a unique thing where I would say this with Seth is where I know I always have a seat. That's where there is always a seat saved for me is with my husband. And so I am so grateful for that. Wonderful.
That's amazing. I will tell you, going back to grade school, if someone was picking on Heather.
Yeah, this is true.
She tells the story. So
people picked on me a lot.
I would be there to kind of stand up for her and don't need to get into it, but I always would by her side. So going back to the sixth grade and she's definitely now is always there by my side for sure. So it's been, I think that history and one of the things kind of a side note to this that she wrote in her diary or journal that I didn't even know about at the time. Cause I had moved away like seventh grade. So we were just together friends and that little, you know, puppy love for a year or so. But she wrote, someday I'm going to marry Seth Day. And then at our wedding, her dad was a pastor. And I, you know, he read from that very notebook that she had and someday I'm going to marry Seth Day. And so it was just beautiful. It's like, man, I just want to encourage whoever is listening to this. Like you might be right, but you might be wrong about the timing. It's like, you know what I mean? Had we, had we dated when we were for us,
we would have ruined it for sure.
I was a mess at 19. I was grieving the loss of my brother and at 17, 16. But when I met her, like just at that point, wanting something more. And I think God knows timing in our lives more than we do.
So. Yeah, that's for sure. So that's amazing.
Profound.
I love that. I mean, I think for us, I experienced a lot of bullying growing up. It's very, I mean, obviously different from your bullying, but I was a very obese kid. And I mean, that you can't sit here. I mean, it's that scene. It's the scene from Forrest Gump when he's walking onto the bus. You can't sit here. Seats taken.
Yeah, kind of deal.
I felt very much like that. I got into a huge fight in third grade because no one would let me sit next to them. And I finally just sat down somewhere and the kid started like gouging my eyes out to get me to get out of the seat. And so I just pummeled him and then they kicked me out of school for it. So, so that was like a big part of my childhood. Sure. So when I asked that, like, has that like impacted you guys' marriage? I would say for us, that's been something that's sort of an ongoing thing is sort of my childhood trauma from being bullied being the fat kid, you know, or whatever.
And for so many years, I felt like he needed to kind of suppress that and be like, no, I'm fine. Everything's great, you know, and just like not feel it. And the problem with that is that you get down the line and at some certain point, like it's going to come out.
Like,
and
I'm
going
not to be actually made fine.
Yeah. And I think the pandemic did some of that too, just like making you like kind of slow down, both of us, like we had different, you know, things like that, but it does inform you as an adult. I think a lot of times people don't recognize how much your childhood and the things you've gone through very much affect who you are as an adult, why you think the way that you do, why you do, you know, just your motivations and all of that. So
I have to tell you, I'm reading a book right now. It's Viola Davis's book, Finding Me. And in the first chapter, she tells this story of doing, she says she was doing a movie with Will Smith, two movie stars.
Yeah.
And Will Smith turns to her and he says, "Hey, Viola, who are you?" And she goes, "I'm Viola Davis." And he goes, "No, who are you?" And she goes, I'm Viola Davis. And he goes, "No, I'm still the 15-year-old boy who had a girl break his heart."
Yeah.
And really in all of my interactions, I'm just trying to convince somebody to love me. So who are you? And she said, without even thinking, she goes, "I'm still the third grade girl who's being called the N-word and being chased home by a pack of boys. And I'm running as hard and as fast as I can to get home. I'm still a little girl who's running home." And that I have been thinking, I talked about it with Seth. I'm like, but who are you, Seth? And I'm like, it is so true because we are, all of us are carrying these tiny people, you know, around with us. And we don't realize how it's informing our communication or our relationships in the present, but it is.
And I think when you can look at each other through that lens, it allows you to look at your spouse with so much more compassion and not even your spouse, but like
people
you're interacting with. That's so big.
People who have a totally different experience than you, Seth, what do you say?
What is it? I don't, which part?
Oh man, I set you up.
I teed it up for you, babe.
He always says it's hard to hate people up close.
That's what I was going to say just now. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say. Yeah. So Brené Brown says, I was
true.
Already gearing up myself up. I was like, this is the time to say this. So Brené Brown,
he loves this quote
because it's so true. Because I'm a person, like, if I meet you and I don't instantly like you, that's it. You know, the out of sight, out of mind. And I've been so wrong about so many people in my life, and people then have said, oh, he's a jerk, because probably, rightly so. I have learned that so I used to teach this course for a university for nursing students, and we do something where we look at people, but we understand the assumptions we have about people we meet. But then we have to understand their backstory, and we can't understand someone's backstory if we can't get past assumptions. So we have to set all assumptions aside and understand their backstory. And so, in other words, it's really hard to hate people up close, as Brené Brown says. Yes. And so true.
That is, I think there's something, it's easy to despise people behind a keyboard. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or behind a screen, or behind, that's why Twitter is the way that it is. You're just like a cesspool of negativity and I can't handle it right now. But like to sit across from somebody over coffee, or drink a glass of bourbon together, or have, you know, brunch somewhere. It's like much harder, you know, because you're seeing someone face to face, and you're sharing a moment, you're sharing a story. And I think that's so beautiful. And that's something that's been such a huge deal. I think it is, I feel, the only way forward for our nation. And maybe not just our nation, maybe the world, because we're so quick to say, no, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually want to have unity or peace or anything beyond that feeling of superiority or being right or whatever it is that causes us to act so hatefully, you know. But I wonder what it would look like for us, not just with our spouse, not just with our kids or our parents or whatever, but the guy who left the negative comment on your Facebook post or whatever. Hey, let's have some coffee, you know, let's talk about that. I wonder how that would impact things.
Eckhart Tolle, who I absolutely adore, his book, A New Earth, something he says in there that really as a communication person just struck me. He says, what if I care more about the person than what they're thinking about me?
Yeah.
And how would that change all of our interactions? And I'm somebody, I teach, I don't even know anymore, like just hundreds of students, right? I don't know how many students I've had in the past decade. And something that I've learned is, it's very rare that I've had a student I didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, I can probably think of two times in 10 years of hundreds and hundreds of students that I had a student that I actually was like, they're like, I should stay away from that person. Most of the time, even when I think, oh, their head's down, they're being disrespectful, they don't like me, whatever it is, as the semester goes on and I get to know them, I find out that the assumptions that I've made are really coming from this other place. And once I learn that story, it is very difficult for me to not see them as a human being.
Yeah.
So something I just say to myself before I talk to people now is, okay, what if Heather, what would this look like right now if you care more about this person than what they're thinking of you? And how would that change the way you communicate in this moment?
Yeah.
There's a book, speaking about kind of the division, and you talk about sometimes on Twitter and we get all the, sometimes the political carnage that goes on and all this stuff. Several years ago, I read this book by Justin Gibbony, Michael Ware, and Chris Butler called Compassion and Conviction. And this line in here really stood out to me, this sentence. He said, love always wills the good for another. And so if I set everything else aside, all of my agendas, all of my preconceived thoughts and notions, all of my views, what I know is right, even if they're wrong, if I set all of that aside and say, but first, what must triumph over all of this is that I must will the good for this person as I begin to interact with them, and not come in to prove myself right or to show anything else. Kind of, it's just like, that is our call, this common humanity, kind of all of us here on this earth, because we've all been through suffering, and there are things that will divide us because we have been hurt. And so we're all guarded. And so being able to put human life and regard that and love that person and will the good for them above all else, I think is really goes back to kind of what you were saying, what this nation needs in the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's so good. Well, guys, y'all are amazing people. Sorry, what were you going to say, Heather?
I was just going to say, I just wrote an article for Newsweek called Religion Without Religion.
It's fantastic. And
I quote all of, because I think honestly, politics is becoming our new religion. So much so that we're using the exact same language that we would use in religious language of light versus darkness, right? You're no longer a Democrat. You're a baby killer. You're no longer a Republican. You're a deplorable. We're using religious language to describe a political ideology. And I think it's very dangerous when we have religion without religion, but this is true of all religions. Right? Of Buddhism, of Christianity, of Hinduism. Yeah. There's this emphasis placed on love and on humanity. Mm-hmm. Yes. So where can we all find the common ground if we actually talked about the things that we all agree on? One of my best friends that I talk about in the article is atheist. One of my best friends in the entire world. He absolutely believes that we should be loving each other as people.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do we start having conversations with people talking about what we agree on before we get to the stuff that we disagree on? Why am I so threatened by what you don't agree with me on that I can no longer see you as a person?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
Wow.
That is so good. I share a name with a guy who's a pretty prominent political figure. Okay. And he goes on the news stuff all the time. And my Twitter just becomes like, you're a horrible Nazi vampire whose mother should have drowned him as a baby. Like I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tweets at me every day. Just
my goodness.
And
you
I'm
would
like,
think people would check to make sure it's the right person before leaving comments.
Just
like
start
that.
There. Like it feels so simple as to just say, just look at the picture. It's like, look at who you're talking to, you know? But like, I feel like that little thing is so representative of something so much bigger. Mm. Like we don't care who we're talking to. You know what I mean?
That is good.
We have no clue. We have no clue and we don't care.
Wow.
And if we could just recover what it means to care, I think it would be so much bigger for everybody and
fulfilling.
Yes.
Because as I can tell you, this is true of both evolutionary biology and Christianity. You are wired. You were created to exist in relationship with other people down to your biology and physiology.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We need relationship actually in order to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yet we're cutting off the very thing that we makes us feel more alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So wild, man. You guys are amazing and so brilliant. And we're so thankful for you guys jumping on the podcast with us today. And we would love for you guys, if you're watching the podcast, to make sure you go grab a copy of their book. I'll see you tomorrow. We're going to drop all the links in the show notes here and you'll be able to go grab that. And it's already out. So let's get it out there. Hopefully you'll have healthier relationships in your own life. And how can people find you on social media, guys?
You can find me on Instagram, Heather Thompson Day, and Twitter, Heather T as in Thompson, Heather T Day, D-A-Y.
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm Original Sad King. The story behind that, we'll get into it. So Original Sad King, and then Instagram or Twitter is just Satham Day.
I love that, guys. Very cool. We'll also drop those links in the description box as well in the show notes. But guys, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. Yes. It was such an awesome time.
Just thanks for having
talk
us
with y'all, and we love you guys. Hope you have
we love you too.
You too,
and hope you make it through winter, and maybe the little Grinchy heart about Christmas will melt, and when you see that tree it'll start to grow, and
we will play a Christmas song in honor of this conversation.
Thoughts
today.
And prayers. Thoughts and prayers. Okay. On that one,
are you familiar with Leslie Odom Jr. though? He was Aaron Burr in
of course.
Yeah. Okay, so he's good.
I'm a massive Hamilton.
You will love his Christmas album.
Okay, you've convinced me. Say less.
It's so good, and it's it's so good. He's got a double vinyl collection he just released. We'll it's like it's great. You'll love it.
Have a little fire tonight, and we'll listen to it. Thank
you. There you go. And you can listen to it like year round. It's like it just feels like classic jazz. It's really just bring you on. It's so good. Yeah, Leslie's he's a good dude. So, all right, guys, love y'all. We'll see you next
time.
You. If you have not already subscribed to the What's Up Beautiful People podcast, we would love for you to do that, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, here on YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd love for that. Also, leave a review because it just helps us to kind of keep doing what we're doing, and we would love for that. But see you back here next Friday. Adios.
Bye, guys.